What's up? This is Jared Holt. The date is May 6th, 2021. And I'm back in DC with my proper setup for recording. And this is another episode of Shitpost. On this episode, I'm going to be talking to Charlie Barzell. He's been doing some work along with his partner, Anne Helen Peterson, for a book about digital working. It's called Out of Office. It's coming out later this year. And we're going to talk a little bit about the things that working remotely for 14 months have taught us and what the future might look like as we rethink work and readjust as vaccines are rolled out and our offices start begging us to come back into the real estate they rent. I'm going to dive right into this conversation, but before I do, I just want to remind everybody, if you like this show, please leave it a good review on iTunes or wherever you're listening. That helps us out a lot. And if you really like it, you can go to shtpost.substack.com. There's a newsletter for paid subscribers who are generous enough to support the show and keep this going. And that comes out every other week between episodes. The most recent one I wrote was about the Trump bump and what conservative publications may do and some of the thoughts I've been having as traffic declines across the board in the post-Trump era. But without further ado, let's dive right into the conversation I had with Charlie Barzell. Joining Shitpost, we have a guest we've had back in the day, I suppose, Charlie Barzell. Charlie, what is it you would say that you do now? You've left the New York Times. You've got a newsletter called Galaxy Brain that I've been enjoying a lot recently. How would you describe what you do now?
Oh, man, good question. Thanks for having me. I would say that blog? Truly, I sort of feel right now that that is like probably the closest analog. But I mean, I'm still writing and reporting, but it's in on the internet and all of the ways that it changes like culture and society and politics. But I would say that it's a little more informal now. I've gone from the opinion page of the New York Times to this blog that has my face plastered over the Galaxy Brain meme. So it's a step down in formality maybe, but I think it's a little bit of like a deeper and sort of broader focus.
So how would you say that this stacks up compared to the president's desk, which is the latest media innovation cooked up by Donald Trump's team, where Trump can post photos, videos, and text to a website, and it's all right there. It's kind of amazing. I haven't seen anything like it before.
Oh, yeah. Blogging is back, man, for sure. Trump's basically just created I think he gave Brad Parscale, $6 million or something, and they gave him a Wix website that looks like that's Tumblr. So they made him a Tumblr. How does it compare? Well, I would say that hopefully what I'm working on will be a little bit better written and a little more in depth. But, we're all just kind of out there slinging content. So in that sense, I guess Trump is now a direct competitor, and I will do my best to crush him.
All right. Well, Charlie, I wanted to talk to you because you put out a couple editions of your newsletter about this recently, and you're writing a book called Out of Office with your partner about digital work. This is something that I've been thinking a lot about lately. When the pandemic first started, I had this you know, all these sort of existential thoughts about, like, how is society going to reshape after this? And I felt kind of ridiculous thinking those kind of thoughts a month or two into it, being like, ah, people are just going to go back to normal. But now that we're, you know, well past a year of having everything shut down and working from home, it's kind of hard to imagine at this point that, you know, life will not change. And a huge part of life, at least for most people, is work. You know, that's what we do in many cases 5 days a week. And, you know, we try to live it up on the other 2 days that we get. Yeah. So, you know, I guess my first question is, explain to me what the book's about and why did you and your partner, you know, how did you guys get the idea and, you know, what made you want to start writing it?
Yeah. So we, in 2017, I guess like pretty much right after Trump's inauguration, my partner, Ann Helen Peterson, who also is a newsletter blogger, we were both at BuzzFeed and, you know, living in New York City. And we sort of, she's from Idaho originally, and she had some, like, you know, hankering to be in a closer to home than New York City, and in a place that was a little, like, less, you know, massive big city. And we both kind of thought that it might be interesting to try to do some journalism from a place that, you know, isn't one of the main sort of hubs, that there might be something there, might be helpful. So we pitched it to BuzzFeed to move out west. We settled on living in Missoula, Montana. And we moved there and basically became these people who, you know, worked from home. And for me, especially, it was incredibly novel. And I just kind of collapsed. I had like a real difficulty with it.
What do you mean? What was tough about it?
What was difficult was, I am somebody who's, like, you know, always had extreme structure in my life, and the sort of, like, the working from home portion, you know, I was worried I was going to, you know, be worse at my job, that, like, so much of the, you know, serendipitous stuff that happens at work, you know, those chance encounters, the quote unquote water cooler stuff, the collaboration in person, that was actually like what made me great at my, or like good at my job. And that, you know, not having that, I was going to fall behind. I wasn't going to be noticed. I was going to, you know, just like lose out on everything. And so to compensate, I worked just constantly, like, you know, 15-hour days, just roll out of bed, no commute. You're just constantly moving. And I basically burned, you know, way the hell out. And over time, I learned how to actually truly, like, work remotely. And what I ended up doing was basically decentering, like, work in my life. Like, I created time for other things. You know, I restructured my work days. I didn't work when there wasn't, you know, immediate work to do. And when there was work to do and it was off hours, I would do it. And I just kind of created this really interesting balance for me. And, you know, during that time, I realized that there is this, like, what working from home can do is decenter the primacy of work in your life. Is this, like, you know, a lot of us are just these, like, one dimensional beings, essentially, because we've been trained that, you know, we have to give our full selves, our complete selves, to our work, and that it must be, you know, completely all encompassing. And so fast forward to the pandemic hitting, and we saw everyone kind of, you know, be forced to work from home, and
yeah, and not go so special anymore.
Yeah, and go through, though, what we went through, except, you know, there weren't any other outlets, right? There weren't, you know, you couldn't go and see anyone. I mean, you were both working from home and hiding from this deadly virus. And I think, you know, initially, Annie and I thought, like, we might have something to sort of, like, you know, to say to, like, help people through this and sort of understand that, like, this isn't really what working from home is, but if you do want to make it work, this is how you can. And we pitched this book and started working on it in, you know, the fall of last year, right around the election. And the book just like morphed completely. It just changed. It was just sort of like, it, you know, it wasn't a how-to guide. It's not like a self-help book. But really what it was we just started talking to people about their job experiences and how good and bad they were. And you know, how management is just constantly, like people are just really, really crappy managers. And there's such a lack of trust. And that basically everything that may or may not make remote work like possible and successful for people, it all comes down to sort of like, you know, the real basics of creating like a humane, like humane work environment that isn't obsessed with growth, obsessed with scale, obsessed with wringing out every last ounce of productivity and sort of, you know, making work the centerpiece. So the book is actually kind of this like... semi-radical manifesto about you know, this isn't working. Like the way that we are orienting our entire lives around our jobs, it's not working. What we're getting back, you know, is not commensurate with how much of ourselves we're giving. And I think it's making us really miserable. And I don't think it's actually long-term sustainable. So, yes. Yeah.
So on that note, you know, I think something that the pandemic did that, you know, you're getting at here is kind of expose to a lot of people who maybe hadn't thought about it before, or maybe who were, you know, lost on the sauce of career advancement or whatever, just kind of how ritualistic a lot of modern work is, whether it's throwing on a pair of slacks and picking up your dry cleaning, you know, commuting in, moving and living at a big city, depending on what kind of job you have. You know, like, for example, I moved to DC from Arkansas because I didn't think I could do reporting if I, you know, stayed in Arkansas, yeah. Unless I wanted to go work for like the one paper that was just constantly bleeding out staff. And I think only recently updated its website to something current looking like 2 years ago. You know, that's beside the point. But yeah, you know, a lot of what we do and how we think of work, it seems, is kind of just justified with tradition. You know, it has always been like this. It, you know, why do we wear a suit to our job? Well, because that's what you wear. You know, it's not that there's a real reason for it. And I think more people, as they're working from their sweatpants and, you know, munching on popcorn and skipping showering some days, you know, are starting to kind of understand that in their own ways. You know, you had prior experience with that in, you know, moving out west in 2017, you know, what parts, at least as you look around or as you talk to people, of those kind of flaws do you think are seeming to resonate with people more? And which one of, you know, how many of those flaws, if they're out there, that you think have yet to be sort of broadly more recognized, you know, can we expect on our own personal horizons? What I'm saying, Charlie, is my third eye open all the way yet? Or is there something I'm missing?
Yeah, no, I think you kind of like hit the nail on the head with the notion that there's so many things that we just do out of tradition and out of practice. And we don't actually, we don't think about like the why we're doing them. This was like a real wake up call moment for a lot of people, and it should be, because you basically strip out a lot of the fanfare and you realize that, you know, so much of what you're doing on a daily basis is performance when it comes to work. You know, there's the performance of, you know, either for your superiors, there's the performance of busyness, you know, even just the way that even digitally this happens, you know, the way that we performatively email and you know, like live action role play our jobs by, you know, kind of creating like a digital paper trail or a physical paper trail that isn't necessarily, you know, part of like the output, but it's something that shows that you're like on and around and doing what you're supposed to do.
Twitter is really great for that for reporters.
Yeah, absolutely. Right. But there's, you know, I'd say it's so much worse in the, you know, sort of, the other parts of the knowledge work, world and in a lot of different industries. And I think, you know, when you strip out the commute, when you strip out the, you know, the actual, like, I'm not saying this necessarily in a, it sounds more like pejorative than I mean it, but like offices are like, you know, they're intimidating in the sense of like, they remind you of like the largesse of, you know, the corporation is bigger than you, you know, they can afford real estate downtown in Manhattan. some buildings are really grand or really, you know, beautiful. And there's this sort of like, you know, there's so much performance involved in the work. And I think when you do kind of strip it down to its most basic elements, you do realize just how much time is wasted there. And I think people will continue to do that. And I think it'll actually have a relatively profound effect. I mean, I just in the sort of the media industry, there are a number of people who, you know, people who've done like what I just did recently and have gone independent or freelance. You know, there was one person I talked to when I was kind of making the decision to go, they were like, I basically realized during the pandemic that like my newsroom is essentially, I mean, there are some, you know, real positives to it, but for what they were doing, you know, this person said my newsroom is basically health insurance and a Slack room. And that was it, you know, the rest of it I can do on my own. And so I think it's clarifying in that way. And I do think that, I think it also, really what the pandemic has done in a way that I haven't heard talked about a lot is it's also just kind of changed our understanding of risk, right? Like you know, you see so many people right now, or the trend of people quitting their jobs, or the trend of people, you know, making really big career choices. My former colleague, Kevin Ruse, called it like the YOLO economy. I think one part of it is risk assessment, right? Like when you spent 14 months worrying if going to the grocery store, you know, might have you end up in the ICU. Like you know, you treat the idea of like quitting this job you dislike maybe a little bit differently. And I think that there's something to that for a lot of people.
So the notion that you explained earlier about decoupling work, or decentering work in our lives, you know, making work not the main thing, but a thing, maybe a big thing, but a thing in addition to the rest of what we're doing. To be, you know, blunt about the question, do you think that this is compatible in the framework that our economy is built on? Like, do you see a path to getting there? And if so, what is that path?
Yeah, I mean, I do. This is one of the hard things about the book, right? Is that, mm-hmm. and it's something
I do realize I'm asking you, like, fix the economy, Charlie. How do I?
No. But like, it's one of the hard things about the book is that, you know, we're trying to talk about the future of a very specific kind of work, which is, you know, knowledge work. When it comes to sort of that, you know, remote or really flexible or whatever, asynchronous, as, you know, people are calling it, that kind of work. It's not like an important thing to note at the outset is it's not like evenly distributed and fair, right? Like if you work in a service industry, like you're not going to be able, like you can't, you know, wait tables from home, or things like that. You know, like a lot of the quote unquote essential work isn't something you can do, remotely. And there is an unfairness to that. And I think that's why, you know, why it's essential. And like, you know, people who blog like myself are the exact opposite of that. So that part of it is just generally, you know, it is unfair, but there are lots of knowledge workers. And then when it comes to, you know, how do you, can this happen? I do think it can happen, but I think that it involves some massive societal changes, right? Like what you need is you need some big changes policy-wise to safety nets, right? Like you need to decouple healthcare from employment. I mean, I think that's probably one of the biggest ones. We need to think about things like universal childcare. And these things are obviously political and they're obviously, big swings. But those are the things that sort of, allow more employers, I think, to get on an even footing and really start to, create work that is more flexible. So it's difficult because this stuff is not just some corporations will never be in the position to offer types of perks and benefits and even flexible style of work that say like a very high end tech company you might be able to do. But there's also a lot of smaller things that people can do. I mean, the absolute biggest thing that we found in talking to, 100 plus some people about all this stuff was that management, the management of people is such a massive hurdle and is really the thing that makes the lived experience of work terrible. And so much of it isn't malicious, right? It's actually just people who get elevated to managerial positions who don't know how to do their jobs, who are never trained to do their jobs. And a lot of that is because companies are trying to stretch margins. So they say hey, X engineer, you're really good at writing code. In fact, you're really, really good. Would you like to be in charge of your engineering team? And the person says, well, I don't know. I'm not really a manager. And they say, well, we'll give you an extra 15% of your salary. Okay, sure, I'll do it. But then they don't teach that person how to do it. And so they then don't know, how to look after their employees. And, we saw these, had these testimonials from people that showed that, a lot of gender pay inequities in tech startups happen because their managers don't even know that they can look at the payroll sheet and see what their employees are getting paid or, go through and compare. And so you just have a lot of this stuff where people are kind of just blundering through because there's so much pressure to scale and there's so much pressure to hit these certain targets. And people aren't really thinking about, what is sustainable and how do we actually, how do we actually manage and listen and respect our employees? So I was just blown away. I'm kind of rambling here, but I was just really blown away by the fact that a lot of this sort of, there's no silver bullet to making work suck less, but it's all it's not like you need to design some crazy algorithm or, have some incredible, mind blowing, innovation. It's treat people well. I don't know. It's kind of basic stuff, but the basic stuff is the stuff that gets, either ignored or swept under the rug really early on in a lot of companies.
Well, Charlie, what you're suggesting seems a lot like a Venezuela, the fail socialist utopia. No, I mean, I think that's all good points, right? I think at least knowledge work, the way you talk about it, definitely could change. I know I'm certainly not jumping at the opportunity to go back into an office. And it's not because I don't care about my coworkers or whatever. I just have a very transactional view of work. And especially in the line of work that I do, I found that is sort of the best way that I can preserve, the balance and sort of the firewall that I have between what I do for my job and what I do with the rest of my life. And it sounds like, what you're suggesting kind of you know, maybe isn't exactly the same thing, but is maybe along those vibes, you know, as, you know, decentering work in our lives and viewing it as a transaction between you and an employer rather than part of your identity or, you know, something that's fundamental to who you are. And I think, you know, if that's fair to say, but, and I just think that that is a way better way to go about it, because as long as we live in this country, in this economy, the whole premise of your work is that you're generating more money for somebody else than, you know, you know, you're generating, like, the whole premise of a job is generating, like, surplus value. And to have, like, generating surplus value as the core of an identity, I just seem so fucked up. I don't know.
Right. Like, well, so you know, I've gotten some pushback. I mean, the book's not out, and it won't be for a little bit because publishing is very slow. But we're done with it. I've gotten some pushback from different people talking about this and even reporting or just bouncing ideas, that it's like people sort of misinterpret the message as, like, you know, decentering work, the importance of work in your life means, like, not giving a shit about work, or, you know, or right, not working, wanting to work hard, or not, you know, like, the value that you get from work, that we shouldn't have that. And, like, I think that people who make that linkage, like, fundamentally misunderstand what we're trying to say. And it's sort of similar to that whole idea of, like, oh, well, you know, the thing we're seeing right now, right, if the unemployment benefits are too good, then, you know, no one's going to work. And that's why, you know, Hardee's is having trouble finding, you know, fry cooks. And it's like, no, that's not that, like, that's such a shallow understanding, I think, of the world, that people don't want, you know, to have a, you know, derive value from what they produce, like, from a job. Like, I think people do want that. They want to, you know, they want to produce something. They want to be, you know, creative and to feel, you know, to feel that they're adding value out in the world. But what that does is that gets sort of leveraged against us to say that, it must be the entirety of what we do. I don't think that's necessarily true. I mean, I think we've all kind of fallen into that trap. And what I'll say is, you know, with regard to the transactional thing, it doesn't even have to be that too. Like, it's not saying that if you love, you know, where you work and you think your boss is good and you care about the company because, you know, it's got a mission that you align with, that's a problem. But it is a problem if, you know, the company uses that closeness to, you know, manipulate you or to guilt you into working more, or, you know, like, there's this idea of, with so many companies, you know, and has been for a very long time, this tradition of, you know, oh, we're like a family here. And, you know, that basically is code for trying to, you know, erase a lot of boundaries.
I've never met anybody that, you know, if you really look into it, has a really just outstanding, impeccable family life.
Right. Yeah.
We've all got weird stuff.
Right. And so much of family is, you know, based on obligation, and it's obligation hopefully out of, like, love, but this is just obligation out of, like, you know,
health
using
insurance.
Obligation. Yeah. And using obligation as a tactic to get more out. And that's not to say, like, it should be separate from the notion that, like, you know, it's fine to care about the people you work with, and it's fine to, you know, to feel pride in what you do and where you work. And so I think, like, it doesn't even have to be the transactional thing, but there is something refreshing about the transactional culture. I wrote in one of my earlier Galaxy Brain posts about this company, Gumroad, which is a platform for, you know, creators. And basically they tried to be a company and failed and had to lay off a lot of their workforce. And over the last, like, 3 or 4 years, they've basically built this, like, company all on part-time labor. And it's like kind of a radical model. Someone described it as, like, the gig economy for, like, the top 0.01%, because it's, like, it pays really well, and it is, like, hourly. But the one great thing about it is fully transactional. And they say, you know, the founder of this company just basically says, like, I don't want to manipulate you guys. I don't want you to feel this way. And I also, like, you know, I want this to be one of many things that you do in your life. And when you've finished, you know, providing the value that I'm paying you for, then you should completely, you know, cut your ties until the next time you need to provide that value. And that's the extreme example, but I think that there's something clarifying there. And, you know, from what I can tell from the reporting I've done on with that company, those, you know, part-time employees are really, really happy and really well paid and don't have, you know, a lot of that bullshit. So I think it can go in a lot of directions. There's no sort of like monolithic model for this, but I do think that we're still so wrapped up in this status quo. I mean, just this notion, like, you know, so many executives are drawn to the office because managers, their jobs are like often pretty hard to quantify, right? Like a lot of it happens through these sort of, you know, like random, you know, interactions throughout the day. And right. When you take away that place, it means that they actually have to do the really hard work of reaching out, staying in touch, listening, you know, and then also like trusting people too, that they can do their jobs when they're not being micromanaged. And that's really hard. And I think, you know, but it's part of that sort of, this is how we always did it, and so we have to do it this way.
Yeah. Well, we're running up on time here. This has been really interesting. Out of office, do you guys have a release date yet?
Yeah, December 7th. So hopefully right after a lot of people end up back in the office and are kind of wondering if this is good. Like the hope is, I think a lot of people are going to come back to the office, be very excited for social interactions, and then a couple of weeks or months later say, you know, I did kind of like the freedom I had. So hopefully this will be something that they can use to navigate that moment.
So I'll put a link to pre-orders for those interested in the episode description. Charlie, you've been on this show before. There's a final question coming up, but one thing I want to give you a chance to plug real quick is this project that you're a part of called Side Channel. It's something really interesting. I'm in the Discord server that you guys have set up, kind of keeping a passive eye, you know, maybe one day ascending to the level of cool kid and feeling like I can post in there. But tell me about Side Channel. What is it? What's the vision?
This is what I was going to say is my favorite thing right now on the internet as a plug.
Well, fast forward. Charlie, what's your favorite thing on the internet right now?
So Side Channel is this, you know, big chat server, Discord server that we created. It's myself and seven other independent journalists, all newsletter writers, some Substack, some not Substack. We created it basically as a way to kind of recreate like the experience of like working in a you know, media company without having the media company. You know, like media companies have these really active Slack rooms where everyone's sharing information and sort of, you know, keeping each other up to date and discussing and sussing out ideas that end up being, you know, stories and sometimes not. But what we basically did was, if you subscribe to any of our newsletters, you get access to it. And it's a way to interact with all of us, but also just all the different sort of like-minded people who've all expressed this desire to, you know, to support us. And, you know, our work is sometimes overlapping, the eight of us, but oftentimes it's very different. And what's been so amazing, why it's my favorite thing right now on the internet, is actually has literally nothing to do with the fact that I'm involved, and more that it's like, it's one of the first sort of big, you know, 1,000+ people internet communities I've been in that hasn't just gone completely to seed. It's just like, it kind of, I mean, it exists. Like, all my channels for Galaxy Brain sort of exist and, you know, are populated with content, you know, outside of anything that I do. It's really just this like really fascinating discussion platform. And yeah. And so we're bringing different people on, every week for these like, informal, you know, interviews, and there are these voice only interviews that we'll record as podcasts. We're going to start doing some like happy hours with people. A lot of people are going to come on to promote books and, you know, things that they have, but, it's kind of, it's this experiment to see if you can kind of create some of the best parts of a media company, like an internal discussion component of a media company, and then make them semi-public. And people can kind of, you know, watch us do our work and help inform it. And yeah, just get a look into how the sausage is made.
All right. Well, I've been talking to Charlie Warzel. Charlie, thanks so much for coming on the show again. This was a great conversation that I enjoyed a lot. Links to Charlie's newsletter will be down in the episode description. As always, it's very, very good so far. I've really been enjoying, you know, some Warzel freeform style, you know. But no, seriously, it's good. It's thought-provoking. You won't regret it. So go check it out. Charlie, thanks so much.
Thank you for having me, man. I appreciate it.